the number one rule in improv is to make other people look good.
Absolutely.
That's the number one rule on stage, because when we make other people look good, we automatically look good, but then they realize that they love us and they don't know why.
That's right.
Because it's about how they feel.
You hit it right on the head there. Absolutely. That's so right on.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again.
I'm Gina Tremarco, sales trainer and consultant at Pivot 10 Results and founder of Carolina Improv.
And I'm Rachel Pitts, mommy, wifey, and mortgage loan officer for U.S. Mortgage.
A singing lender. Sorry.
One day I'll feel like we keep every episode just about we do a thing, but.
Well, if you say it enough, maybe it'll happen.
Yeah, I guess so. It's clearly not a super priority for me because I have so many other things going
on. It's not a priority.
I'm prioritizing my next music video that's coming up. So excited.
Oh, is that the...
The Gaga.
The one that... I can't wait for that to come out.
Yeah, I just got a text from the guy. Excited. He's working on it. It's so fun.
Super excited. Hey, I'm super excited about this episode.
Me too. Rob Berg is really, he's fascinating and he's got such great messaging. You guys will love him.
He's another one of those I got like a business crush on.
Yeah. I can tell when you have a business crush on somebody.
When because I'm gushing?
I never get to talk. I'm like, okay. It's cool. It makes my life easier. It's fine.
Well, I did like hit you up in the chat. I'm like, hey, if you want to ask a question.
I'll shut up. I might actually shut the fuck up for a second. You didn't really,
we really didn't need to ask him a lot of questions.
No, he's very clear on his messaging and he's got a lot of great tips that you guys will pull immense value from.
So if you're not familiar with Bob Berg, he is the author of The Go-Giver, and it's a series of books about providing value. Okay, that's the best way to summarize it. Let's talk a little bit about The Go-Giver. It's a Wall Street Journal and Business Week bestseller, has sold over 950,000 copies.
Ooh.
Since its release, it has consistently stayed in the top 25 on Porchlight's business book bestsellers list. The book has been translated into 28 languages and it's rated number 10 on Inc. magazine's list of the most motivational books ever written. So I was super excited about him coming on the show.
Yeah. You know, it's really wonderful about somebody with that high level of accomplishment is he's still super down to earth and he's just a normal human, you know, just maybe a little smarter than some of us over here.
Yeah, he's awesome. And shout out to Casey Hasen for the introduction. She is a true go-giver and the president of our fan club, self-proclaimed president. We let her keep that title. So thanks to Casey. And also thanks to Scott Ferguson, another past guest of our show, because I was angling with him, trying to get him to connect us to Bob because he like lives down the street from Bob. So thanks to those two people who are also amazing go-givers. I will say one of my biggest takeaways, and I saw it on your face, Rachel, when he's talking about value and standing in your value of, you know, like what you charge for. And I think you were giggling because I sent you a message this morning that my other crush, Jeb Blunt, sent me an email this morning that I'm not charging enough money for things I'm selling. So
I agree with him. I didn't get a chance to Marco Polo you back, but I agree.
Yep. So I saw the look on your face when he talked about it. I knew what you were thinking because I had already messaged you about it. So that was my big takeaway. Did you have one big takeaway?
I love there's a quote that he uses in his Go-Giver book. It's "Give and ye shall receive," which is a really great, it's just a great message that you'll receive in this entire podcast.
Yeah. So let's get going and hear this episode with Bob Berg. We We are so excited to welcome Bob Berg to the Women Your Mother Warned You About. Hello, Bob.
Gina and Rachel, great to be with you both.
It's such a dream to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Some might call it a nightmare kind of to have me with you, but it's certainly a good dream to be with the two of you.
Well, good. We hope it's not a nightmare by the end of it with us.
You just never know with us.
You never know. Well, one of the questions that we often ask people is around the definition of women your mother warned you about. Rachel and I consider us women your mother warned you about, which really is about women who go against the status quo and stand in their value to get things done as long as we don't hurt people along the way. Sometimes people don't like us. Sometimes people love us. We just kind of go against the grain. How would you define a woman your mother warned you about? And did your mother warn you about women like us?
No, not at all. Not at all. Oh, your description of yourself wouldn't be the type of woman I would ever have been warned about. You know, what you said was very basically libertarian in definition, in terms that, you know, I believe in terms of libertarian thought that everyone has the right to live their life and pursue happiness however and in whatever way they see fit, providing they don't infringe upon the rights of anyone else to do the same. So however you as women go about pursuing your happiness, I say women in this case because it's women that, you know, mother warned you about, then that's fine. I think it's awesome, actually.
Awesome. Thank you. Do you have any women like that in your life?
Yeah, you know, I've always seemed to attract women. The women I always dated always were women who had very high self-esteem. And I would always have considered them feminists, though they rarely describe themselves that way. But I think the reason is because feminism in modern day, and even over the last 20 or 30 years, has sort of a different definition for different women. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. So if the definition that that a woman doesn't agree with, obviously they're not going to define themselves that way, even though to me, that's what they are.
Interesting. I don't consider myself a feminist, but I think that listening to what you're saying, Bob, that some people might describe us as leaning towards being feminists because we try to empower and inspire women to stand in their value. But I definitely like the door held open for me by my husband.
Well, here's the thing. There's no dichotomy between being a person who has high self-esteem, walks in her value, and any other positive aspect of being a person or being a woman, if you will, that you want to have, and wanting a guy to be a gentleman.
Agreed.
You know, I don't see the, you know, the there'd be a false dilemma, the unnecessary use of the word or, to say it's one or the other. If you have high self-esteem, it means, you know, you cannot stand up, you know, when a woman enters the room, or you cannot hold the door open. Well, I do both of those, and I consider myself to be a feminist. I don't know if you have to say male feminist. I think just feminist is anyone who believes in equal rights under the law and so forth. So yeah, I don't see that as being an issue.
I like it. You get to stay. You get to stay.
I'm not mansplaining by saying that.
And you're not mansplaining. That's awesome. We do have a male co-host, Keith, who could not be with us today, and he sends his apologies. He often balances us, and you know, we like to have different points of view. So it's always good to have him on to throw us off a little bit, or to provide amazing insight. Yeah. So let's shift over to the Go-Giver, because I know I was super excited at the opportunity when Casey introduced us, and I had already been talking to Scott Ferguson about getting introduced to you. So it's kind of interesting because I do believe that go-givers flock together. And so when you look at, you know, who is part of our tribe and who we attract and who we're part of, we all have those similarities. Not everybody's familiar with the go-giver. That's I'm stoked to have you on the show today. So for those who are not familiar, can you give us an overview of the book? And there's a series of books, but just a general overview of the book.
Yeah, it's a series, and three of them are parables, and one is more of a how-to guide. But the books are The Go-Giver Leader and The Go-Giver Influencer are the parable series. And the basic premise, really, of the entire series is simply that shifting your focus, and this is really the key, shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing immense value to others, understanding that doing so is not only a very pleasant way of conducting business, it's the most financially profitable way as well. And not for some woo-woo, way out there type of reasons. It actually makes very logical sense when you think about it, because when you're that person who can take your focus off of yourself and bring it onto others, being laser focused on making their lives better, bringing value to them, helping solve their problems, helping them to attain happiness through, you know, whatever, however it is you happen to do it in the end through your product and service, but however that ends up manifesting itself, when you're that person, people feel good about you. People want to get to know you. They like you. They trust you. They're much more likely to want to be in relationship with you, to do business with you if that's appropriate, and to refer you to others. In the sales aspect, and the first one was really written for salespeople and entrepreneurs, you know, I often say when I speak at a sales conference, one of the first things I'll say is that nobody's going to do business with you. Nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. Right? They're not going to buy from you because you need the money or have a mortgage payment to make. And they're not even going to buy from you because you're a really nice person. They're going to buy from you because they believe that they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so. And when you think about it, in the basically free market economy in which we operate, and when I say free market, I simply mean no one is forced to do business with anyone else. People do it on their own volition. In that type of economy, that's the only reason why anyone should buy from you or from me or from anyone else, because they believe it will be advantageous for them to do so. This is good. That means that entrepreneur, that salesperson who can really take their focus off themselves and actually place the interests of their customer first, that's the person who creates that what we call benevolent context for success. It's why we say that money is simply an echo of value. It's the thunder, if you will, to values lightning, which means nothing more than that the value, the focus on providing value to another human being comes first. The money you receive is simply a natural result of the value you've provided.
I love it.
There's so much I want to dive into with that, besides loving it. And Rachel, if you don't mind, it's the first thing that, I don't know if you may already know this about me, but this is the first thing that came to my mind is the world that our company lives in improv-based training for organizations. The number one rule in improv is to make other people look good.
Absolutely.
That's Absolutely. The number one rule on stage, because when we make other people look good, we mm-hmm. automatically look good, but then they realize that they love us and they don't know why.
That's right.
Because it's about how they feel.
You hit it right on the head there. Absolutely. That's so right on.
So that is juicy, and I don't want to dominate with all the questions. So
that's all right. No, I just was thinking the same thing in my industry in real estate and mortgage. People can tell right away if you're breathing on them with commission breath. And all you care about is getting to the sale. And they can also tell if you really care about what's best for them. And I think that's what you're getting at with your philosophy of go giver, Bob, is really just when you put those people first, not only are you going to make more money eventually because people genuinely want to do business with you, you'll also feel great about what you're really doing, because we always feel, if you have never experienced it, I highly recommend, when you get out of yourself and help someone else before your own needs, it feels a lot better than just grabbing money and putting it into your pocket.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are people who think, well, that, you know, that's fine in terms of, you know, philosophy, but, you know, but what if I need the money now? And, you know, this go-giver stuff, that's fine after I'm already successful, but what if I need the money? And what they don't realize is that when they think, well, but if I'm going to make the money quickly, I need to focus on the money or focus on myself. But again, that goes opposite to what you just said, because they're not buying from you because you need the money. They don't care that you need the money right now. So if you really need the money right now, the best thing you can do is to place that aside and focus on them. Because to the degree that you can communicate the value that's in it for them, well, that's the degree they're going to do business with you sooner rather than later. So yeah, it's actually in your best interest to put the other person's interest first.
Well, it's interesting right now at the time of this recording, we are still in the midst of the pandemic and businesses are still struggling and suffering. And I'd be curious to know how that's impacted you and your business. And what have you seen out there, you know, from a go-giver mentality? Are people go-giving at this time? I can tell you that one of the things that I started doing immediately when all this happened, because a lot of our contracts canceled or postponed, you know, we kind of were like just sitting here with nothing left to do. So instead of becoming idle, we started giving back to other businesses and spending our time coaching and consulting and training and not getting paid and just doing it for the purpose of lifting other people up and other businesses up, and giving a whole lot of value without expecting anything in return. And that's just the way we roll. So I'd be curious your thoughts on what's going on in the world today with that.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of companies had to do that because there was, you know, when business was shut down, especially, you know, and it's just starting to, I guess, open up a little bit more now, but for, what was it, 2 months or so? I mean, it was basically shut down. You weren't going to have sales if that was your desire. It wasn't happening, and there's nothing magic about this. So, what the intelligent business people did was they found a way to bring value to their prospects, customers, and clients, even though there was not going to be an immediate payoff. Understanding that the work they did now is what would come back to them once things did open up. As an example, a couple of examples, if I may, I remember a person saying to me that they sold a high-end product that at this time it wasn't going to happen, you know, wasn't going to, and he said to me, you know, I can't really even call to keep in touch. There's nothing I can really say to them. They don't want to hear from their salesman right now. You know, that they're trying to think how they're going to stay in business. And I said, yeah, they probably don't want to hear from their salesperson right now in terms of your particular product, but would they like to hear from you in terms of how they could, do things to help them to stay in business and to thrive once things get, you know, back to business? And he says, yeah, but what do I know about that? I said, well, you don't have to know. The fact is there are others who do. And I told him about a colleague of mine, Dan Burris, who over the past 40 years has been one of the most well sought out business forecasting experts. I mean, this guy's just so brilliant. But and Dan has been doing a series of Friday afternoon webinars on what businesses can expect and how to navigate through it. I mean, he's just a genius. And I said, what if you called them on the phone, okay, and you just you call to check in, let them know you're thinking about them, and that you were told about a series of free webinars from one of the best business forecasters. We used to call them business futurists, now business forecasters, right? Sorry about that. And so, and I said, and you can ask them whether they would like the information to listen in. Do you think they'd appreciate that? And he said, yeah, they would love something like that. So that's what he did. And then he called them, find out if they were interested. Most of them were. And they said, well, let me email you or text you the link so you can listen in. That was a way of bringing immense value to them, even though there wasn't going to be anything immediate, but there wasn't going to be anyway. Mm-hmm. So now once things get back, now who are they going to be thinking of? Are they going to be thinking about his competitors who just kind of stayed away and didn't do anything because there was no use, you know, because they did, right? Or the person who had them in mind, even though there was not a direct sale to be made at the time. And the chances are it's going to be this particular person. Now, there's another person. She is a woman who is an executive in the sales department with corporate sales for AT&T. And she was checking in, calling some of her clients, who, of course, they were at home and so forth. And this was during lunch hour, or right around that time. And she could tell that the client was, you know, kind of frustrated and a little bit kind of out of her head a little bit. And she said, "What's the matter?" She goes, "Oh, well, you know, I've got my kids home and having to do the homeschooling and the little one." And she was telling me, she said, "Sounds like you need a break." She said, "I do." So she said, "Well, why don't you do this? Put your little girl in front of the camera." And by the way, she looks, this salesperson looks a little bit like, I think her name was Elsa.
Ah, is that the one in Elsa, yes. Right?
I haven't seen Frozen yet. I haven't seen E.T. yet. So, you know. but so she looks about this. So she read her some children's stories dressed up as Elsa. Okay. Now, here's the funny thing. The mother loved it so much, she asked if she could invite some of her friends for another one. And this gave this AT&T executive the idea to make this available to all her clients. And her clients could invite people. She even set up a Facebook page for it. And then she dresses up either as Elsa, other characters. She invites other characters on. And they read children's stories at noon. Now, what immense value she provided. And who is going to be the person these people go to and stay with and can't be torn away from. After this thing, you know what I'm saying? So there's lots of things we can do. Now, of course, you're not doing it for the reason of getting something in return. No, you're doing it because it's who you are. It's what you do. That's the spirit you have. But again, there's no dichotomy between this. To the degree that your focus is on giving or providing value to others, that's the degree to which you cultivate these know, like, and trust and very loyal relationships.
That is incredible.
I am so inspired by that.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Hey, Warners, just a quick reminder. If you love this episode, share the love. Share it with someone. Share this episode or the show with a friend. Pass the link on. Promote it on social media, on the interwebs. Share the show. Share the love. And now back to the show. Brilliant. Oh gosh, Rachel. Rachel and I have a tendency to have a million amazing ideas, right?
And I actually have a really great Elsa outfit, so there's that. But you know, there's a real estate agent in my market that is a realtor partner, and when the pandemic began, she started making masks and delivering them to pretty much anybody that asked. She wasn't asking for money for it. She just felt like it was something she could do. And what she discovered in making these masks and delivering them to people is that she got business, and she was actually surprised. And I said, it's very genius of you. But she didn't think, if I make masks, I'll get business. She thought, let me make masks for people to help them because I don't feel like I can do anything else right now. And in turn, she got a lot of business people that were wanting to list their homes and purchase new homes and et cetera.
And when you think about it, again, it makes logical sense because people want to do business with people who they know are more likely to care about them.
Yeah.
Right. And someone who just makes masks in a time like this is someone who cares.
Love it.
Yeah. We pretty much are who we are.
And, you know, you started at the top of this conversation about taking the focus off yourself and putting others first. Curious on your thoughts on, is that something that comes natural? Is that something people learn? Is that something that's teachable? You know, there's some people that just aren't really good at putting others first. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, for some people, it's more natural than for others. I think like anything else, you know, it's we have inclinations to be a certain way. But if those inclinations are not developed and nurtured and worked on, they're probably only going to be so effective, right? There's others who may not have that inclination, but once they understand why it's important and they begin to practice and put it into use, they feel so good about it and they realize it is something they can do. Mm-hmm. So I think it really depends on the person in terms of how natural it is. The good news is anyone can learn how to do it.
That's excellent.
I just want to make sure to clarify too, that when we talk about placing other people's interests first, because the third law in the Go-Giver was the law of influence, which says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. It's important to clarify and qualify that statement, because when we say place other people's interests first, we're not saying that you should be anyone's doormat or a martyr.
Good
or self-sacrificial in any way, shape, or form. Absolutely not. It's just that it's several mentors in the story told Joe, the protege, that the golden rule of business, of sales, of life, is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And there's simply no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you in others than by genuinely and authentically moving from an I focus, as we talked about earlier, or me focus, to an other focus. Looking to, as Sam, one of the mentors in the story, advised Joe, make your win about the other person's win. And as you develop a reputation for doing that constantly and consistently, now you become that go-to person that others see as that center of influence and that trusted resource.
Well, since you've talked about one of the values, there are five values in the book. Could you touch on those five values?
Yeah. The first is the law of value. The second is the law of compensation. The third is the law of influence. Fourth is the law of authenticity. Fifth is the law of receptivity. The law of value is really all about giving and providing such a value-based experience that other person feels as though they've received much, much more than what they've paid for. It's like if you go to a restaurant and you have a magnificent meal, but also the ambiance is great. They welcome you when you come in, and the wait staff as a team takes great care of you, and they just have that way of knowing when to pay attention and when to leave you alone to dine. And for the entire experience, the owner comes over and makes sure to say hi, and everything about that experience was such that, boy, you know, the check might have been $150 at the end, but you came away feeling like $1 million. You receive more in value than what you paid for, while the restaurant owner, of course, made a very healthy profit. So in a free market-based transaction or exchange, there should always be two profits, the buyer profits and the seller profits, because each of them come away much better off afterwards than they were beforehand. The law of compensation, which says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. This is all about how many lives you impact. So while the restaurant may have provided an immense value-based experience, in order to make a lot of money, they have to serve a lot of people. Well, the more value you provide to the more people, the more income you bring in. One of the mentors in the story, Nicole Martin, who was the CEO, told Joe, the protege, law number one, the law of value, is about your potential income. Law number two, the law of compensation, which measures how many lives you've impacted, that equals your actual income. Law number three, we discussed the law of influence. Law number four is the law of authenticity. This says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. In this chapter, Deborah, one of the mentors, shared a very important lesson she had learned in her sales career, and that is all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are all indeed very, very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core. But when you do, when you show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you. They feel comfortable with you. they feel safe with you. After all, they know who they're getting, right? This is when they know you and they like you and they love you and they trust you and they want to be in relationship with you. When people don't show up authentically, it's typically not for any reason of malintent. It's more because they don't have the confidence in themselves, the self-confidence to show up authentically. That's why the work that the two of you do is so very important. Because if we don't recognize the value we bring to the table, and I think value, our authentic value is twofold. I think there's intrinsic value, which just means by the very nature of being, we bring value to the table. But there's also market value. And I define market value as that combination of strengths, traits, talents, and characteristics that allow you to add value to others, to the marketplace, in such a way that you will be compensated for it. But if you don't embrace those assets of value that you bring because you don't recognize them, which can be difficult because we're human beings and we're so emotionally involved in ourselves, we don't always see that what we have or what we know or what we bring to the table is so special, which again is why what you do is so important. But if we don't recognize that, that's when we're going to undercharge, underprice ourselves, sell ourselves short, right? And nobody wins that way. So, you know, it's very important to make sure that you know, understand, and embrace your authentic value, because that's what you're going to lead with. And then law number five, the law of receptivity, says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. And this really means nothing more than understanding that we breathe out, but we also have to breathe in. And just try doing one without the other. It doesn't work, okay? You breathe out carbon dioxide, and you breathe in oxygen. You breathe out, which is giving. You breathe in, which is receiving.
Love that.
Giving and receiving are not opposite concepts, despite the messages of lack we get from the world around us. Oh, my gosh, I hear things that are said, how, you know, people who are wealthy had to have done it by nefarious means and by taking advantage of it. Now, it's a big world. Of course, there are lots of people. And if we want to see things a different way, we can always find evidence of it. But the messages we get, and many times it's a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television shows, movies, all the different that the wealthy are horrible and nasty and mean, and the poor are always good and they're happy and so many nonsense. People are people. And again, to the degree that we operate in a free market, which means no one's forced to do business with anyone else, the only way you can make good money over time, sustainably, both immediately but also sustainably, is by providing immense value to others. So giving and receiving are not opposite concepts. They're two sides of the very same coin, and they work in tandem. The question is not, are you a giver or a receiver? That's the false dilemma, right? It's, you are a giver and a receiver. But what you know is that the giving comes first. The focus is on the giving of value to others. When doing this, again, you create that benevolent context for success and for wealth and for prosperity and for abundance. And when that happens, you need to be willing to embrace it.
Awesome.
What a great reminder.
Yeah, really.
On receiving. Such a great reminder.
I think people definitely need to hear that. And you can feel it when you go somewhere, like the whole classic used car salesman analogy, where you can feel it when the person only cares about their money that they're making. And people may not be able to put their finger on it, but they can feel it when you care as well.
Exactly.
Well, Bob, we've got some signature questions we like to ask before we wrap up. And the first one is, how do you define sexy?
How do I define sexy? Is it?
I'm leaving that open-ended on purpose.
Is this how I would define sexiness in a woman?
Sure.
Yeah.
You really care how a 62-year-old even defines sexiness?
Well, you know, this is the podcast that makes business sexy again. So that's kind of our theme of like keeping things sexy. But everybody's got a different definition of what they find sexy.
I would say I would say a woman who is kind, who is charitable, who has a great sense of humor, and who really has confidence in her value, who owns her value, I think is very sexy. And a really cute tushy, but you know, I mean, that's
wonderful.
I'm feeling very sexy now.
Very good. Very good. Tushies are important. Second question. What is the best advice that you ever got? Aside from that last little story that you told us, but what is the best advice overall you've ever received?
You know, I think it's advice that, that I kind of just observed in my dad, even though he didn't necessarily tell me this, it was kind of how I interpret everything he did. And that is, I would say that the single greatest people skill is a highly developed and genuine interest in the other person. My dad always went out of his way to make other people feel genuinely good about themselves. And I would say that's the, you know, that bit of advice that I took just from observing it.
Love it. And lastly, what is a bit of advice that you wish someone had given you?
Well, that one's actually pretty easy. And it sort of goes back to what would I tell the 20-year-old version of myself? And it would be this: Bob Berg, shut up and realize that you don't know anything close to what you think you know. And to paraphrase a statement attributed to Mark Twain that there's no record he ever said, but it's very wise and it sounds Twainian, so people usually. And that is that most of the things you're absolutely positively sure you do know just ain't so. Because I really felt I had it all figured out as a 20-year-old. I mean, I knew the way life worked. I understood human nature, what drove people, what was, and I was so far off.
It's so funny. The older we get, I feel like we go the other way. I knew it all at 20. And then at 50, I was like, I think I need to figure it out.
Oh yeah, definitely. In my 20s, I thought I knew. And obviously, because I got married the first time at 21, I knew what I was doing, but clearly I did not. And as I reached 40, I started realizing, nope, I don't know anything. And I think I'm still going backwards to like, I have a lot to learn.
Bob, it's been so awesome having you on our show today, and we know how busy you are, so thank you for giving us your time. You're delightful.
Oh, well, thank you, the two of you as well, and I thank you both so much. It's been great.
Thank you, and before we wrap up and say goodbye to our listeners, if people want to connect with you and the Go Giver series, what are the best ways for them to do that?
I'd say just go to burg.com. While they're there, they can scroll down and click on any of the books to get a chapter to see if they like it first before clicking through if they'd like to. There's also a video blog I do usually twice a week.
Oh, cool.
And they can scroll, I think, all the way down, and they can connect with me on all the various social media platforms.
Fantastic. So thanks again. And thank you to all of our Warners for listening today to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. And if you'd like more information about our show, about me, about Rachel, about Keith, you can go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. And Rachel, we should probably mention Patreon. I think we forgot that.
Yes, we have a new Patreon page, so if you'd like to go and check it out, you can go to patreon.com/warners and check out all of our goodies there.
And hey, if you like this show, go be a go-giver and go share it with someone, because that we hope to provide value to everybody who listens, but maybe you have someone who needs to hear these shows. So if you could share that, we would be super appreciative. That would be awesome. Keep on keeping it sexy. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Woman Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof. Monkey, monkey.